We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Philip has just lost the respect of the Youth League football team he coaches. He was asked what New England should do in the draft, and his answer was objectively terrible. The Athletic just wrote a great article about this, but Philip doesn't have the Athletic or the respect of a boisterous group of 11-year-olds who once looked up to him. Learn from Philip's error, get the Athletic, and get the info you need to speak draft fluently.
The Angie's List you know and trust is now Angie, and we're so much more than just a list. We still connect you with top local pros and show you ratings and reviews, but now we also let you compare upfront prices on hundreds of projects and book a service instantly. We can even handle the rest of your project from start to finish. So remember, Angie's List is now Angie, and we're here to get your job done right. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I, or download the app today.
Hey, Buff Nation, voice of the Buffs, Mark Johnson here. Welcome to the Buffs Inside Zone, our podcast here at the University of Colorado, where we catch up with former Buffs. And boy, we've got a good one today. When you think back in the history of Colorado football, there certainly are not many guys in the defensive side, and specifically in the secondary, that can put the kind of resume together with the guy we've got here today. He was an All-American. He played for the Buffaloes from 1991 to 1994. He was one of two Thorpe Award winners at the University of Colorado. The great Chris Hudson, number 47, joining us here for a few minutes. Chris, great to catch up with you. How are you?
I'm doing fine. Doing great.
It's kind of a crazy time. We're all learning about what it means to quarantine and stay at home and being around the family quite a bit. I imagine you're facing those challenges like the rest of us right now.
Yeah, by force, right? Nah. It's going good. You know, you're learning things about your kids that you didn't know, and you're learning, well, some of the things that you didn't know about your kids. You're learning, and you're thanking the teachers every day, I tell you that much.
Have you had to, now I don't know the age of your kids, and I apologize, but have you had to be a at-home parent teacher like a lot of folks have?
Most definitely. Had to be, get your teaching skills together. My wife's been doing it mostly. I leave it up to her. I just fill in when I can.
Sure.
That's about it.
Yeah. Well, I tell you what, I'd imagine most parents I talk to have had to do the home teaching. Mine are all out of the house now, so I don't have to do it. But they have gotten a whole new respect for what teachers have to go through when you start teaching your own kids, don't you?
Oh, yeah, you got to respect them because it's so funny. You're sitting up there and you're like, did I take this class? If my kid is like in middle school and he comes with all kinds of things, I'm like, listen, buddy, I don't even remember taking biology or algebra in middle school, you know. So that part is pretty funny.
Yeah, it's a good thing we have Google for things like that so we can look those up for our kids.
Oh, yeah, yeah. One time he asked me a question like, Dad, how you do this? And he looked up. I was still looking at him. I'm like,
dude. Outstanding.
No. It's kind of like when I asked him to do yard work, right? And I'm like, go get this for me. He's looking at me like, I don't know what that is. You know? So I gave him that same look during this time.
Well, I think for a lot of us, it's been an education for both the kids and the parents.
Most definitely.
Yeah, the last few months.
But it's been enjoyable, though. It's been very enjoyable with them.
Well,
with them, really looking in depth at their personality because they can only hide so long. Usually they're with us about, 3 hours a day?
Right.
Now you see them the whole, at least 15 hours a day.
Yeah.
And it's just kind of funny because you really see, because they can't hide their personality much longer, you know, especially when you got middle schoolers that's coming up and you kind of looking at them. I have a daughter that's in second grade going to third grade. So she's going to be who she's going to be. But that eighth grader, you know, he can't keep it hidden too much longer, you know?
Right, right. And then you start to realize, you know, you can't get upset with them too much because you realize they're acting just like you were when you were that age.
That's exactly right. My wife laughed about that also. And it's just so funny because, I mean, you see it all like, man, golly. Listen, I can tell you how to do that a little bit better, but.
Yeah. I saw something on Twitter here a short time ago where a guy said after spending this much time with his kids, he called his mom and dad and apologized to them for all he had done to them.
I think all of us should do that.
Yeah, I think so.
All of us should.
I think so. Well, hey, let's reminisce a little bit. You spent time, of course, at the University of Colorado that, you know, I don't think it's – you can say anything, but it was the golden era of Colorado football. You were coming in on the tail end of a national championship, wrap things up in 1994. When you look back at your time at CU, do you have a big smile on your face?
Oh, yeah, every time, man. The guys, that was so – I mean, so great. I mean, that's where your real friends kind of came from, you know. Everybody was there together, had the same come and go, come from the same, you know, a lot of us came from the same background.
Sure.
So it really, so just being there, growing up, you know, with those guys, you miss it so much, you know, like with Alpha Williams, Michael Westbrook, I mean, yeah. VJ, D-Train, a bunch of those guys, Blake Anderson, it was just so much fun.
Now, you came in from Houston, Texas, and you came in behind Alfred. Was he one of the reasons you came to Colorado, or how did that happen?
Alfred probably was one of the reasons why, because I remember in the ninth grade, me and Alfred, we was in the same conference.
Okay.
And I remember coming in the ninth grade, we played them in basketball, and seeing him playing basketball, and I was like, God, that guy's kind of good. And I heard of him, but, you know, you're in the ninth grade, you're kind of wide-eyed, so
sure. You're
finding out who people are. So Alfred always had that smile, man, and then to come up and see him, he don't know that. I don't think Alfred even know that. But I remember in the ninth grade seeing him in the 12th grade, and like, wow, man, look at him. He's good. And I just remember seeing how good he was in basketball. And also seeing Knavis. I saw Knavis too.
Sure.
And from there, when I came there in the recruiting trip and I was with Alfred, it just made me – I knew instantly that I was coming there. It wasn't nothing. I think I took the other trips just to make sure Colorado was real.
Sure.
And it really had nothing to do with – I mean, it had something to do with winning, but just the atmosphere of how I felt on the inside. Like, it was almost like getting married, right? Like, this is it. This is just it. And I wanted to go on the other trips just to make sure that was it. That was – so it wasn't going to the other schools to see – that, man, let me see what Michigan has, you know, or Notre Dame has. It's just like, let me make sure Colorado is what I really felt. And that's why I went on those other trips. But if I had to do it all over again, when you know you made the right choice, if I had to do it all over again, I'd have done the same thing. But Alpha was a big, big part of that. I mean, just like I said, seeing him and then coming up and the way he made me feel, it was remarkable. And it was just, words couldn't even speak of it. Like I said, it was like marriage at first sight. You
right,
know?
Right. You just knew right away.
I knew right away. I mean, when I say right away, I didn't, like, you get there on a Friday, you go out to dinner, and just that Friday, it's like I knew.
Wow.
It wasn't even a game that weekend. I just knew that was it. Like, this is it. This is the school. Just what I felt, you know, just that attitude, that winning. It was like knowing that you was gonna do what you was gonna do. It was a certain cockiness, but it was a certain humbleness too. It was like a mixture of two.
Yeah.
Which really felt good, you know?
Now was football always your best sport, or were you pretty good at something else?
Play basketball. You know, everybody thinks they're good basketball players, right? I was a chess guy.
Okay.
And then a checkers guy, you know, you always think you're good at those things.
Right.
But football is probably the most thing I probably concentrated on. I took that to every sport. So if I played basketball, if I would play basketball to work on my footwork, and I would make sure that I worked on my footwork because of football, you know.
Sure.
So that was a way to keep my footwork together and different things. I liked it. You know, like I said, everybody thinks they're basketball players, you know. and football players think so, rather.
Yeah.
And just doing that, but basketball was my second love.
Heck, Chris, I still think I'm a basketball player at 52 years old. Not so much.
I always play my son to three. Okay. The older he gets, the less points. He says, "You used to play with your 10." I'm like, "Nah, buddy, it's three."
Yeah, I was going to say, now, when you know that he's getting real close to beating you, that'll be the last time you guys play, right?
Oh, yeah, that's the last time. But we at that point, that's why I take it to three. And the first one, always, he always give me the ball. I hurry up and shoot it. That's one.
That's what you call experience right there. Yeah. Hey, when you got to campus at the University of Colorado, I mean, you were walking into arguably the best program in America at that point in time. I'd imagine when you got there, the bar was set very high. The expectations must have been, through the roof for all of you guys who were coming in as freshmen.
Yeah, when you first kind of got there, you kind of, we had to come in early because of the Pigskin Classic.
Right.
So I remember coming in. So we was basically like we was early than any other school probably, except Tennessee. That's when they started the Pigskin Classic, I guess.
Right.
And when we came in, I mean, everything was, we went straight to a hotel. I think that's what I remember. And just we started working. I just remember it being real long. Like, man, this is long. 2 days, it was just long. But because of that early season, it was. But I was more impressed of the work ethic of them. Like, I was fortunate enough to have the same type of coach from high school to college.
Okay.
And so I was used to hard work, but the speed of it was different, but also the love, because I had never been on a winning team like that before.
Right.
So just the respect they had for each other, but also the love they had for each other.
So that
was different for me, but I really enjoyed it. You know, you have friends that you have on teams, and you kind of like, okay, these are my buddies, you know.
Yep.
But it seemed like everybody loved everybody, you know. So that was the fun part about it. And everybody, you can tell that throughout the jokes and the laughter, that everybody had the same common goal, and that was like to win, period. And that was it.
So you get there and have a chance during that championship season really to watch and learn, didn't you?
Yeah, I was on the scout team a lot. Well, I was on scout team because I redshirted, right?
Right.
So I would cover Pritchard every day.
Wow.
So wherever he went, I kind of went, because I used to try to, like, even though it was my redshirt year, I still wanted to work. So that was my way of work, because I had never sat out during a season before. So I just took it as these are my 3 days of season. You know, instead of having one game, I can just, like, work on whatever I'm working on during this time. And that's how I took it. So I took it pretty serious because of that red shirt. You know, you can burn inside and want to play. It got to a point where, especially at the beginning of the season, you're like, man, I want to play. So you see, like McLuhan and Dion and David Gibbs, and you see them, and you hoping, and Ronnie Bradford and D-Train, and when you see them, you're like, man, I wish, you feel like you want to play, but that fire started to burn down a little bit, like, son, you need to go work. You know what I mean? So that's why I started
right.
really taking it serious and working, because I knew I just had to get better. And so that's the way I just challenged myself every time. And I remember, like I said, having Pritchard over there and just trying to go wherever he went, because I used to see what he did to people. So I figured if I can cover him, man, I can get up. And I didn't do a good job at it, but I just worked every day until I could, you know, have some confidence to make sure that the next year, that I will be ready.
You know, there's always an adjustment, and I don't care who you are, where you come from. When you're a freshman and you walk into that kind of situation with that much talent around you, there's got to be a process to getting to understanding that, yeah, I can play at this level with these guys. Do you remember a moment? Maybe it happened not your redshirt season. Maybe it was your redshirt freshman campaign. I don't know. But was there a moment where you thought, okay, yeah, I can play at this level with these kind of fellas?
Well, it's just, seeing Pritchard and seeing what he was doing and trying to trying to cover him, I just remember, like, at some point that I could feel myself getting better, you know? And I can see it in his eyes, because he might have said something to me, that I was getting better. So I figured that, you know, you still got your confidence and you still try to, but that's worked on every day, you know, every day. And like I said, every time I strapped up and I went out there, it wasn't a day that I wasn't ready to work, you know. And the thing is that I was trying to get to a point because I had a goal in my head, you know, that I had set, you know, because I didn't like sitting out a year. But I knew I had to because of the talent level, right? I knew I wasn't there, not like those guys, you know. And just seeing them in the game, looking, it was always a learning process, but going through the same things, you know?
Yeah. No, that makes sense. You know, you look at your career, so you get there in 1990, Buffalo's going to be 11-1-1, win a national championship. You go through an 8-win season, a 9-win season, an 8-win season. And then that 1994 campaign comes around. And I've always loved, during my 16 years with the Buffaloes, hearing the arguments between 90 and 94 about which was the better team. You're one of the few guys that was connected to both of them. Where do you fall in that argument when it goes back and forth?
Yeah, I mean, I think Afrin and Canavis and I already know. They kind of, you know, they always gave us, you know, they knew that we was better, you know. you know, it was. I mean, you know, you might hear those arguments, but I feel like those guys I already know. I mean, that matter of fact, you can ask the guys from '91 to '92 or '93. They'll tell you, you know.
Yeah, right.
Nah,
right.
But I thought it would have gave us those guys. They had a grittiness, you know. I thought we was probably more athletic. But they had a greediness as a whole. You know, it's like they all had that common goal. And with us, I think we had it, but we didn't have a season like 89 that could help us get to that 90 atmosphere.
Sure.
Make any sense?
Yeah.
So they had a taste of it in 89, but what happened to them, I can tell they vowed that that'll never happen again.
Right.
So with us, I don't think we... I mean, it could be a toss-up, but to me, that's just how I feel. Not saying that we would have went in and not played our hardest, but I just think that they kind of like with the Bulls and the Detroit,
right.
The Bulls needed that, you know what I mean? And I think like just like Colorado in 89, they needed that to get up tonight. But we was part of the seeing the 90 season on how they carried themselves, the gritty and grinders. So we had it because we saw that they – what they had, you know what I mean? We didn't have to go through the 89 to feel it because they made you feel it in 90.
Right.
What wasn't gonna happen? Do that kind of make sense?
I
know
no,
it
I
sounds kind of
yeah.
crazy, but you know we got the spoils of it, but we also remembered it too. So that's why I think we got the edge because we was probably more athletic than them.
That 1994 season is really a fascinating year. You guys were so wildly talented on both sides of the ball. I mean, NFL guys everywhere. You early in the year, you beat the stuffings out of a top-10 team in Wisconsin. You do what you did at Michigan with the miracle of Michigan, all that went along with that. You destroyed number 22 Oklahoma. There's the one loss to Nebraska. You finish the season strong and beat up on Notre Dame in the Fiesta Bowl. What stands out about that 1994 season as you look back on it all these years later?
It was the guys, you know, the journey with the guys. With sports with me, I never looked at it as, you know, sports is something we did, but it was the relationships and the way you felt about a person.
Right.
That I've always taken that part with me more than the sports, believe it or not.
Huh.
The sports, that was important, but the relationships was more important to me, just knowing how you felt about them guys. I mean, it was a four-year relationship, right? Five-year relationship that, you know, you all grew up together, you seen things, you hurt together. You hurt mentally, you hurt heart-wise, you know, things weren't going your way, you know, and everything's just, it really felt, those are the things that you miss, and then looking in guys' eyes and knowing that you're gonna go out to work, but knowing that guy's accountable no matter what factor or what the weather, the circumstance, anything, any situation. I'm sorry that you seen. You just knew that that guy was going to be accountable.
Yeah.
And it's just having that relationship that you miss, or having friends like that that you miss more than anything, because life, you know, life kicks in at some point. But that's mostly what I miss. It's the sport, you know, the age part, that was going to, you know, that's everybody's going to grow old and different things like that. Their skills are going to diminish and different. That's life. But it's the things in your heart that always stay the same to me. It always kind of stayed the same, you know, the love you have for those guys. But those things is the things I really miss, you know. Like me and Westbrook, we talk all the time. It's just being in that, you know, we used to talk all the time, hang out, me and CJ. And it's just the relationships. With D-Train the same way, with Dion just sitting there, you know, nobody's don't have the money to go out and do anything. But it's just the relationship that you miss, because the conversations, those things are never, those things you can, nobody can never take from you. You
Chris,
know?
You're touching on something I think that's kind of interesting, because in recent years, football's been beaten up a little bit for various reasons about the game and the violence of it and those kind of things. It is a game, though, that really teaches you something, doesn't it? I think that's kind of what you're trying to get to here.
Yeah, it really is. It just teaches you about life. I had some businesses. And I got to tell you, when you hire people or you find out people play sports, it makes it so much easier, because because you can relate to them, like, oh, that person will be accountable, that person is disciplined, that person is loyal, you know, those different things. And not saying every team, you know, felt that way, but that's just the experience I had.
Yeah. Yeah, good stuff.
Take it into, you know, you take it into life with you, you know. And yep. And I got to tell you, we had a great leader in Coach McCartney. I mean, we still text to this day.
Yeah. Well, let me ask you about that, because you were on his final team. So, 94 is wrapping up. Rashawn's on his way to the Heisman Trophy. You're getting the Thorpe Award. The Buffs are in the top 10, had been there all season long. And November 19th, Iowa State, Rashawn goes over 2,000 yards. And Zim and I have talked about this many times. He said he's up in the booth, and he starts hearing reports that Bill McCartney, that phenomenal leader that you and all those hundreds of guys had been impacted by, is going to retire that day or announce his retirement. Can kind of take us back to that day and how that was affecting you guys as a team.
Well, I don't remember that personally day, because Rashawn kind of shadowed a lot of that.
Sure.
I mean, you know, because Rashawn, what he had done. But I just remember him saying it, and I was like, wow. You know, I was surprised. But I understood, young as I was, you know, I understood, because he hit it every day. I mean, Coach McCartney, he hit it every day. He was a great, great, he influenced us so much, you know. We were running through a wall for that man. And it's just, it was his time, and I don't even remember the conversation as far as him telling the team, but I do remember the aftershocks of it, and I just remember, as now, the aftershocks of him having his time to do what he want to do now, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But because there's so much that goes into football, and I'm pretty sure everybody know, you know, everybody that coaches, you know, players know that, because if we put in a lot of time just playing and watching film and different things like that, you can't even imagine how much work the coaches is doing.
Right.
You know?
Right. You know, I've talked to so many guys, and I remember a conversation I had with Rashawn a number of years ago before he passed, where I asked him about the impact Bill had on him. And I've asked that question of more guys than I can think of, and heard so many great answers. Can you verbalize what it was about Bill McCartney and all of you guys coming from very different backgrounds and being very different types of people, and yet he was able to make a connection and bring all of you guys together? What was it about Bill McCartney? What characteristic was it that he was able to do that?
He's a man's man, right? He's like a man's man. What I mean by that, I feel like I'm a man, but it's like, God, he's so much more than that to me. He was like a father figure. I mean, a lot of his ways I've adopted to in my way of life, in my way of thinking also. He was a man of his word. He never compromised. And he was a man's man. Like you know, some people say, man, that's a man, you know.
Yeah.
But when a man say that's a man, that's a different type of, you know, man.
Right.
And always wondered how, you know, like, man, he get 100 guys and he got to deal with all these different personalities, but he bring everybody focused down to one role. You know, that has to be a hard thing. But I think through his experiences, he was able to do that. But the thing is, I think the truth to himself, you know, and he made himself vulnerable to us.
Yeah.
And so whenever you're vulnerable to a kid, and that pulls a kid more to you, because most people, you know, a kid can tell when you're lying to them. A kid can know if you fake or know that you're not real. A kid can know that. And these days, especially a kid, just say 5 or 6, 7 years old, they can tell when you don't like them.
Right.
Even they come in the room and they interact with you, they just know, because they never go away from their feelings, what they feel in their heart, like intuition. People call it intuition.
Right.
Well, with Bill McCartney, it was the same thing. He laid it all out on the line, you know, and you just knew his word was true.
You know, you touch on something that over the course of my, you know, 16 years at CU, getting to know Coach Mack, the word that hit me years ago with him was, he's authentic. He is what he is. He does not compromise that. Not everybody enjoys it or likes it, but he is. And to your point about you're able to trust him, when somebody is a coach like that or a leader of in your case, young men back then, when they're authentic and there's no gray area, it's easy to respect that person, isn't it? Even if you don't always agree with him.
Right. You know what he wants, and that's just what it is. And he wants the best out of you.
Yeah.
You know?
Yep.
And you just kind of, you know, the guy Coach McCartney, he had a class on, I remember going to practice and coming out 2 days, and he had etiquette classes for us during camp, and I was like, what is this for? You know, it's kind of funny because you're like looking like, why do we need this? You know, not knowing that he knew we was going into another period of our life, let it make you make it pros or not make it pros.
Right.
Whatever part you was going to, you're going to need to know what fork to eat with, how to pull out the chair for the woman. I mean, he taught us so much more than football.
Right.
And I'm pretty sure anybody that was under his guidance, they would. I mean, it's so many words that you can describe a man, but it's like you said, it's going to come down to authentic. And the thing is that he is not compromising yourself. I mean, it's just so much that he taught you of being a man, you know?
Yeah. And let me hit on a couple of highlights from that 94 season. Just get a quick thought from you on H1. The miracle at Michigan. I've talked to Cordell about that. He says, I get asked about it all the time. You were in that game. One of the great moments in college football history. Give us a quick thought about that game in Ann Arbor, Michigan on September 24th of 1994.
I felt, you can see that. You can feel something that was about to happen. I think that was that good intuition. I just knew, because anytime you have Michael Westbrook at the end, and as long as Cordell can get it down there,
yeah.
I mean, I think so much of Michael Westbrook. He has to be probably the best athlete that I've ever seen in my life.
Right.
Dealing with pros and everything. And I just knew, and that I just had the feeling, you know. But I wasn't going to bet the house on it now, but I just maybe it was more of a hope thing of hoping that we would do it, you know, but I knew we had the capability of doing it. But I was so happy when that happened, you know. I wasn't surprised, but I was surprised if that make any sense.
No, makes sense. Yeah, the miracle at Michigan, one of the great moments in college football history.
And Michael, man, I'm telling you, that was just a piece. I mean, he's such a phenomenal athlete, man. I mean, he's my best friend out here, but it's just, he's a talent. He's still a talent.
Okay? Chris, the good Lord don't make many that look like that now.
I know, that's what I said. I tell my son saw him, he's like, golly. I was like, when he said that, I said, and then some. He said, God, Mike, that's Michael. And then some, but
yeah. Chris, I you know, and LaVisca Chenault just came through, and he is of that same ilk, if you will. And I always said about him, and I think it applies to Michael Westbrook, I'm not sure what planet those fellas come from, but I'm not sure it's Earth, I can tell you that much.
Oh, yeah, most definitely, man. Somebody really, God touched them, buddy.
Yep, no doubt.
Hey, we got to make this like this. And it's like, golly, man. Because Michael, man, I just, when he used to eat Fruity Pebbles, man, I used to be, man, how do you eat that and just look like that all the time? I had to figure it out. Like, he'll eat a pot full of Fruity Pebbles and just Cocoa Puffs, that's what it was. And he would just, I'm like, you're going to eat the whole box? And I'm like, yeah. Them brains popping out of your stomach.
See, Popeye had spinach and Michael Westbrook had Cocoa Puffs. Who knew?
Cocoa Puffs. And I'm like, look at his veins in his stomach, man. He just, golly.
Oh, genetics are an amazing thing, no doubt about it. Hey, let me ask you about you. So you guys are rolling through that season. You come out of a win at home over Kansas State, and you're unblemished on the season, and the biggest matchup in America that season was Colorado at Nebraska, and you guys suffered your only loss that year, which took you then ultimately out of the national championship picture. What do you remember about that game?
I don't. I just remember being really just mad, like, man, I can't believe we lost. You know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah.
So, I mean, because we had a great team, and they just put it together that day, you know?
Right.
And we didn't. And I just remember being so mad, like, man, I can't believe this. But, you got to give them props, man. I mean, they might not have been as athletic as we were, but they kept it together. They kept it, the X's and O's, and it's just not, you know, one thing is that, especially when you lose or what have you, it's not a knock on the coaches, it's not a knock on the players, it's just probably that 10% that we both, you know, that coach can say, I could have called a better plays, and that player could have said, well, yeah, I could have played a little bit better. Well, that little bit cost us, you know what I mean? And I'm pretty sure everybody in their heart think, like, they could have did something different, you know?
You bet. You bet.
And you always, you know, but and those things you tend to kind of get out of your mind because you just kind of try to move forward. You know, especially as a defensive back, right? You're taught to do that anyway.
That's right.
But you just kind of do that. So I don't even remember the game at all.
Hmm. Interesting. So, well, what did it mean for you and that day in 2016, and I was emceeing that day, when you got inducted into the CU Athletic Hall of Fame? Well, what did that mean when your institution, your program, calls you back and says, we're going to induct you in the Hall of Fame for all time, that people can come by and read about what Chris Hunson meant to this program? What did that mean to you?
That meant a lot. That meant a whole lot to me. You know, life had got in the way, so I hadn't got back much. But when they said that, I mean, I just saw it from a different light, you know, and I was just like, wow. Because I had never thought of myself like that. I never looked at it like that. I just enjoy the times. I never looked back and kind of like smell of roses. I just enjoy the time that I'm in it. And when they said that, and I remember getting that text, and I was like, what? And then it made me so proud because I know that like Alfred Williams and Cliff Branch, like you hear those names, Hagen was a great. Whew, I just remember just like, wow, man, I couldn't believe it, you know. And then Michael, it happened the same day, and me and Michael talked, and I was like, man, this is crazy.
That's
you know
cool.
what I mean?
That's cool.
And the thing is that to be inducted like those with those guys, Dion Figures and all those. It was just an honor just to be, because you never look at your play as your play, like, man, I'm good or this and that. But you know the people that's in there is good. So it's like, man, they got me up there with them. Like, I can't believe that. Like, with Alfred, all he's done, Dion. So you kind of look at it like that, you know, like, man, they must think I was good, you know?
Well, I tell you.
Like, you're looking at it like that. So I was surprised. I was very happy about it, very happy. Then I was happy my kids got to see it, and because we never talk about football, like with my son, and I never talk about like football. Just he plays basketball and what is that? Soccer.
Okay.
So we just never talk about anything that I've done. I never say anything about it. And when when he's able to see it, he kind of like, wow, you know, he was surprised.
Sure.
He was surprised to see that I had made it. He was surprised because he had never seen footage, but now I can kind of see him now looking at footage, different things like that, things that I've done.
See, you were always just Dad, and then all of a sudden he thought, holy cow, this guy was acting. Exactly, that can't be my dad happened. Up there, can it?
That's exactly what happened. He just was like he never looked at me as a football player because I never brought it up to him, like
right.
near the old days or anything like that. I would just go through teaching him about life, you know. I would try to coach his basketball teams and different things like that. But other than that, he never brought it up, and I never bring it up. And that's just, we were just living the ways of life. But now I can see him kind of looking and asking questions and different things like that. So I tell him now anything that he wants to know. We watched the game the other day with Colorado.
Nice.
You know, played Notre Dame.
Yeah.
He sat in there and watched it with me. And he wanted to watch. He said, he was playing. I said, but you need to watch this, buddy. I say, this is why I went. Because, you know, the game, the 89 game was there before.
Yeah.
And he was like, yeah, but they lost. I said, I wish I had the whole season, you can see.
Right, exactly. Right.
They were so bad. You know, they were so good. So he was looking at Hagan. I pointed out Alfred to him. I said, you see him right there? And Hagan, and he would see it. It was just, man, it was just remarkable to him.
I bet that was a great education.
But I probably was smiling more than he was.
You probably were.
That I had when I was there. See what I'm saying? So I probably was smiling more. Like, I just remember that game, especially being down there at the championship and how it felt and hearing that bum when someone scored and how, man, golly, that was so remarkable.
Yeah. Great memories, no doubt about it.
Hey,
before we let you go here, you know, the Buffs program has had so much change here recently, of course. We had a coach who came in for 1 year, and now Carl Durrell is in there as a head coach, and we're all just tickled to have Carl because he's a Buff. He's loved that program. He's had the house there in Boulder for a number of years. He loves Boulder. I wonder, what's your view as you look at CU right now and coming out of this craziness we're dealing with, COVID and all that, but knowing that Carl Durrell and Rick George are there kind of leading that program, how do you feel about things?
I think the program is going to go up. Coach Burrell, he's always been like a quiet killer. You know what I mean?
Yes.
He
yes.
just gets the job done. He's quiet. Don't need to talk much. He's always, you know, had it together because he taught Mike them, you know, Westbrook them on the receiver side.
That's right.
So I remember seeing him, talking to him, and I think he's going to do a great job. You know, I think he's going to, you know, take his time. He's going to do what he needs to do. I think he's a great leader. And you know, Rick always going to make things happen, man. That got to be the best athletic director around, okay?
Amen.
He's going to be able, Rick know how to make things happen. He always has. And I got full confidence in him. But with Coach Burrell, I think he's going to do a great job. I think he's all in, which is good. You know, 10 toes in, he's all in, and he's a committed man, you know, and you can see that. And he's been around, and I think he's going to do a great job. I think he's going to do a remarkable job.
Yeah, I agree with you 100%. Chris, it has been great catching up and reminiscing a little bit about a great period in Colorado football history. Hey, blessings to you and the family, and you guys just stay safe and make sure you let us know when you're going to be back in Boulder again.
All right, thank you so much, and watch out for those mountain lions now.
I certainly will. Chris and I were talking about the little ranch I've got up in the mountains. He was asking me about mountain lions here a while ago. Well, great to catch up with the great Chris Hudson. A Thorpe Award winner, All-American, and one of the greatest Buffs in Colorado football history. Wrapped up his career in that phenomenal season, 11-1 of 1994. Great stuff today on the Buffs Inside Zone. I'm Voice of the Boss, Mark Johnson. Thanks for joining us. We'll talk to you next time.
Let's jump into Peppa's world of play. Look for spring flowers, hunt for muddy puddles, and bravely explore exciting places with Peppa play sets. Peppa Pig. Inspiring kid confidence.